irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Happy Monday. This is Justin Nimmergood here and filling in at least for the next couple minutes for Mr. Bruce Cameron. He's running a little bit behind today. But I am so excited, not only, you know, about today and today's guest, but just, you know, over the last couple of weeks, some of the things I've personally been privy to, respective to, you know, the economy, respective to business. I know we are all going through a tough time right now, you know, both with COVID and then obviously, I mean, just so sad to see what's going on in the world. Otherwise, you know, I mean, some of the protests and the violence, you know, that's ensued there. But, you know, I want to say, you know, out to all our listeners out there, just keep the faith right now. I mean, I can't stress that enough. And I know it's probably over practiced, but it's so important at a time like now that, you know, we practice simple rituals like gratitude, for example, are going to really go a long way when we're all going through something so trying. So I just wanted to state that up front, you know, before we get into the throes of today's guest and his wonderful insight. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce our guest for today. Our guest is Mr. Robert Fukui. He just actually coached me on how to pronounce his last name.
Good job.
Wonderful guest. Mr. Fukui, Robert holds a bachelor's degree in marketing from San Jose State University and an accomplished 24-year career in marketing and sales with companies such as Coca-Cola, Novartis Pharmaceutical, and Bristol-Myers Squibb. Over the course of his professional career, he has been privileged to be instrumental in the launch of 6 major brands, personally responsible for over $150 million in revenue, and is a recipient of the National Sales and Leadership Development Awards. His successful experience in sales and marketing through the ever-changing economic conditions has positioned him to be able to assist other businesses to achieve similar success in any economic environment. Robert's most recent corporate experience has been with Bristol-Myers Squibb, one of the largest biopharmaceutical companies worldwide and among industry leaders in HIV, immunoscience, and oncology. Robert had been with the company for 17 years in sales and marketing, winning multiple regional and national sales awards. In April 2016, he founded I61 Inc., which is a business development network that consults and trains purpose-led businesses to be profitable and make a transformative impact in the communities, cities, and nations they serve. Optimal price, brand, and organizational strategies are the key areas the company focuses on, increased margin of time and money for their clients. In January 2019, Robert and his wife, Kaylee, launched Power Couples by Design, and that is trademarked. Created for couples in business specifically, it is a breakthrough consulting and coaching program designed to develop a thriving marriage and prosperous business within 8 short weeks. Without further ado, I'm so excited to welcome Mr. Robert Fukui to our show today. Welcome, Robert.
Hey, Justin. Thanks. It's good to be on. And you did my last name justice.
Congratulations. Yeah, I'm glad. You know, I always hate that when that happens and you're trying to, you know, say someone's name. I mean, the reason I'm so sensitive to it anyway is my last name gets botched up all the time. So I know how.
And I've heard them all growing up, and especially if people saw how my last name is spelled, which I'm sure they can see it off of the Zoom thing, but people get freaked out. Every time, every new school year, the teacher, you know, I can always tell when they're getting to my name because one, you know, they're saying, calling everybody out in alphabetical order. So I'm just kind of cringing. And as soon as they get to my name, they just pause. They don't know how to, they're trying to figure out how to say it. I mean, you just butcher it.
Well said. Well, I know I did, you know, share a bit, and obviously your background and bio, but, you know, just in your own words, I mean, what else should we know about you? You know, who is Robert Fukui in your own words?
Well, you know, just my own personal brand is just about developing people. I just love whatever situation I'm in, whether I'm actually paid to be a consultant or I'm just hanging out with friends or being on the board of an organization or just whatever, meeting people. I always just had this desire just to want to help other people just take another step to and help solve a problem, basically. But not just solve a problem like giving them advice, but actually almost like teaching them through it. You know, I think it's one thing to develop a strategy for an organization. It's a whole nother thing for them to actually understand and embrace it and know how to do it and execute upon it and really understand it. You know, it's different than just following a tactic and a blueprint versus really fully grasping it and embracing it. So I'm more on the development side of really wanting to really help people just inside out, really understand and take the next step.
I love that you speak to the inside out part because obviously that's something near and dear to my heart. You know, my first published book was all about changing business culture from the inside out. So I think you and I are cut from a similar cloth in that regard.
I just noticed that on your bio. Just read that a few minutes ago.
So we share that in common. And I believe personal transformation absolutely starts from the inside out.
Yeah.
So if you want to hit at the heart of corporate development, you're so spot on that you got to start with the heart of the people, right? Their why, their purpose, and all of that. So I love that you speak to that and you train on that for that matter. Well, let's get into it here, Robert. Tell me, so what are the typical struggles that businesses face that you're seeing in the marketplace in particular today?
Well, just statistically, they always say finance and marketing are the top two issues most businesses are challenged with. And, you know, finance is easy one because a lot of people just don't like the numbers. I mean, every time I'm doing some kind of training or I'm speaking in front of entrepreneurs, I'll ask people, how many people love accounting? Right. And the only people that will raise their hand are accountants or just people that are in the CFO position. But, you know, the reality is only about, you know, just from my own experience, just my own anecdotal polls and surveys, about 10% of business owners really embrace the financials. You know, the other ones just have to, you know, they deal with it because they have to, obviously, because it is an important piece of their business and understanding what's going on. But most people aren't trained, you know, professionally in finance and accounting and bookkeeping. And just because it's not most people's, you know, wheelhouse, they just tend to just want to, you know, hand it over to the bookkeeper and accountant and just let it go, which is dangerous. We can get into that later. And in marketing, similar thing, you know, not very many business owners are actually trained in how to do marketing. And so most business owners start a business because they're good at their craft and they just start charging for it, right? And they just start learning as they go. But marketing and finance are two of those areas that really need a special skill. It all can be learned, but it's sometimes daunting for a lot of people. And because of that, they don't take the time to learn. They just rather hire people out, which from a business owner's perspective, I always say, look, as a business owner, you need to know enough to be dangerous.
Right.
You don't need to be the expert in marketing. You don't need to be expert in finance, but you just need to know enough to ask the question. Otherwise, in the finance, you can go a year, 2 years, 5 years, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, you're bankrupt and you have no idea why, even though the warning signs will be there if you're following it. Marketing, the same thing. You can go years and years and years, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, you're not making money because you're spending way too much in marketing and not getting kind of return that you need. And so that's just so marketing, finance, and Aaron, just because they're not professionally trained, and a lot of it because they just don't, it's just not their thing. And so they don't take the responsibility to really get educated a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you bring this up because just this past weekend, I feel like I have this conversation weekly. I probably do multiple times per week. But I was having a discussion with a gentleman, and he has a utility patent on a glove of sorts. That's a utility glove. Think of it like if you're doing handyman work, and you put the glove on, and it basically is magnetized, so it can hold some nails, some screws, and all that for easy, quick access, right?
Cool.
That's kind of the concept of the glove. And, you know, I'm talking to him, and as I asked him more and more questions, it became very self-apparent that he was not passionate about this. He's not passionate about it. Great idea, by the way. Great design idea.
Yeah, sounds like a great idea. Yeah.
There's a lot to it, but he wasn't passionate about it. And I just asked him, I said, if you're not passionate about it, why are you investing in this, right? And he eventually told me, and I unwound it from him. It took a while to get there, but that, you know, his why was because for his dad. So he was basically trying to live something else for someone else.
as far as
and
debt?
Is I don't know if you find this with a lot of the business owners that you work with, but all too often, Robert, I find that the people I work with, they're doing their why is broken. Their why is broken, or it's not strong enough to carry them through the trenches. Because I mean, I'm sure you would agree, and I'm sure you and Kay had this experience. You know, being an entrepreneur is tough. You know, you're going to go through some shit to get to where you want to go.
Exactly.
Yeah. You have to have an absolute determined, methodical, purpose-driven why. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yep.
I mean, is that what you see a lot as well with some of the people you work with?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Your why is so important, because that's the stuff that's going to carry you through the hard times, like right now, right? If you don't have a bigger purpose beyond just making money, then it's easy to just fold up shop, declare bankruptcy, and move on to the next thing. And so, yeah, we find, a lot of the business owners, they don't have a why, mainly because they've never even explored it for themselves.
Right.
But what I found is the majority of the business owners, as you start to talk them and help them talk it through, we do find the why.
Yeah.
There is something internal that is there that led them to start this business. But it's usually when you ask, you know, business owners the question, why did you start this or why do you do this? They just point to the obvious. You know, it makes money. I'm good at what I do. I'm really good at my craft, whatever. But when you really explore the why of internally, how did this passion come up for this business? Because something inherent is in the business. And sometimes it's not the business itself, but what it represents. So I actually just had a discussion with a gal that actually, she creates these bath bombs.
Okay. Right?
And she's also created a number of other topicals and all that stuff. And so, you know, she was trying to figure out her why. And it wasn't so much about the bath bombs, or she actually created some lotions that really help with acne and all that stuff. But it was just the desire to help people. And so she just, whenever someone has a need, like she developed this acne cream that dermatologists in her town just started selling because it worked for his patients, that she just found a need, and she just researched, you know, different types of formulations and ingredients and all that. And she created this cream. And she just does one thing after another. And so what I said was, so your passion, your why is really just to help people, you know, health-wise. It's somewhat connected to health. And what you're really gifted as is just development.
Mm.
So what you're not so good at is the marketing and the sales, but what you're really good at is development. So the ideal situation for you is to lock in a closet and just go out and talk to people, find needs, and start developing. And then we have to build a team around you that can do the marketing, sales, and some of the finance stuff, the stuff that you're not gifted at. But so anyways, that's how we came up with it. So as just exploring her past and her experience, we did come up with a why. Should I be talking longer?
I'm sorry about that. So in that regard, when you come across situations like that, can you talk me through your process of shepherding business owners through that process?
As far as determining the why?
Yeah.
I just asked them their story. Because the why is always in the story. And so a lot of times it's from even from childhood stuff, you know, things that they just really loved to do as a kid. And now fast forward, a lot of the things that they're doing now professionally is somehow stems from what they really enjoyed as a kid. Right. You know, easy one is I just have a friend, he's a NASCAR racer, and so he just always was outdoors, you know, riding his bikes and all that, entering races and all that kind of stuff. But it's new why is because he also suffered from liver disease as a child and survived and is essentially, I guess, cured or has been in remission since then. And they didn't think he had, you know, just a few years to live back then. So his new passion now for his racing is actually to drive awareness for liver disease.
Wow.
And so it goes back to, again, you go back to the story, right? Yes, the racing part was easy. There was a passion inherently, but the big why actually came from what he suffered as a kid. And so now he's using his platform. So that creates another layer of passion for the racing, because he knows the racing, his success in racing is going to increase the awareness for the thing he's really passionate about. And he's actually passionate about racing too. I mean, he loves the thing, but you know, just it's another deeper layer beyond just the racing and winning prizes.
Wow. Yeah. And, you know, here's another thing I find, and again, I'd love your perspective on it, is when it comes to the why, people are motivated by their greatest pain or the greatest pleasure opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. Do you say you'd subscribe to that, or do you find that with a lot of the business owners you work with?
Yeah. And a lot of it, sometimes they don't really know. It's more unconscious, or to not use that same word, but a lot of times it's not something I should think about as motivated by pain. Again, sometimes a lot of times it goes back to childhood experience. They won't always connect it with what they're doing now, but it is true. And so one of my clients is an accountant, a tax accountant. One of the things she's really good at is fighting the IRS. Whenever she sees injustice, right, in some kind of tax lien or tax judgment or whatever, I mean, she's the sweetest Asian lady. But when it comes to that, I mean, her cockles come up and she's like a mama bear. And where that stems from was she grew up in China, poor, but actually her parents were actually pretty wealthy at the time. But when the communists took over, they seized all the assets, including all the property. So she only knew growing up poor, but her parents were really rich at one point. So it was that taken away, that injustice of property being taken away, that really fuels her fire when it comes to things she sees as injustice, especially when it's from the government, right? And she didn't make that connection until I just asked her story. So it is true in her case that part of her passion for her career, for her business, is fueled by some pains from the past. But a lot of times we just don't know it until we explore it.
Yeah, and sometimes I think, you know, through exploration of Johari's window, for example, and uncovering our blind spots is sometimes where that happens too. Yeah. Or at least that's what I've found. Yeah. So I love that, you know, and you're really doing some wonderful work out there in the marketplace, Robert. I mean, we certainly need more people like you that are purpose-driven leaders out there helping.
Yeah.
It's crazy. All right, well, moving along here, I have a couple more questions I want to make sure we get through, because you just have so much valuable insight to share with our audience. So let's talk marketing for a second. Marketing can be a struggle for many businesses. I think we could all agree. Are there some simple tips that a business can lean on to increase sales?
Yeah, I mean, because of time, marketing is a very comprehensive, a very big, broad topic. But it can be boiled down into one thing. It's relationship. Mm-hmm. Marketing is all about building relationships and retaining relationships, strengthening relationships. Because anyone that's been in any kind of networking group, they always talk about, you know, people do business with people they know, like, and trust.
Yes.
Right? And in order to have that, there has to be some kind of relationship. Right. Even when you're just looking at TV commercials or print ads or whatever, somehow in the marketing, in the promotion, or in the advertising, you just got to start to draw the audience in to build a relationship and have them trust you. Right. And ultimately, once they have an experience with you, with your brand, that can further deepen the relationship, because now you hopefully you're providing what you promised, right? In the marketing. Ooh. And then cultivating your relationship even after the sale. You want to cultivate it because you do want them to be a repeat customer, and also one that refers customers to you, right? And so customer retention is a second piece of that. So, you know, when it comes to marketing, most people think mainly about the promotional piece, you know, doing all the advertising, the social media and all that, and getting a sale. And in fact, you hear words about sales funnels, right? The sales funnel ends with a sale. But really, in marketing, the marketing is actually a cycle, and it doesn't end at the sale. It actually continues because you want them to be a repeat customer. So you repeat the process over again, even after the sale, is you want to continue to cultivate the relationship so they come back, absolutely, right? Because out of sight, out of mind. So people think that once they have the sale and they have a good experience, that automatically the customers are going to want to come back. That's true for about 30% of the time. The other 70% of the time, people are going to drift off to another brand a lot of times because of there's other options. Sure. They hear another commercial. They get another referral from another friend or family, whatever. You know, there's a lot of reasons why the customer doesn't come back. And it doesn't mean they didn't have a good experience with you. It's just because you became out of sight, because all you were doing was concerned about the initial transaction and you weren't considering the cycle of building a relationship. A true friendship, right, is very reciprocal and it's ongoing.
Right.
And so marketing at its core is really about building relationships. And the vehicle, once you do that, that's just how you do it, right? Whether it's social media or for print ads, doing a radio show, doing podcasts, those are all different avenues and tools to develop relationships and continue to strengthen those relationships. So that's how I would, you know, break it down. But I mean, there's more to it. I mean, marketing, the marketing mix, when you develop a marketing plan, the marketing mix consists of, you have to have a product of some kind of value. You have to have a price, know how to charge it. Placement is how you get it into the hands of your customer. And then, of course, the last piece is the promotion. People only think about marketing as that last piece in the four Ps is promotion. But there's so much more to it before you get to the promotion. But anyways, I'm just going to stop there for now, just because we can go on forever. But core, relationships is the key piece. It's actually very intuitive.
This is really important, especially, and it's timely too, Robert. I mean, if you think about it, when not certainly in my lifetime, and I'm sure probably in yours as well, I mean, that we have had the state of the economy where it is, the state of business where it is, a business owner's ability to market their business today is more critical than ever.
Sure. Yep.
The competition is enormous. There's all kinds of switching costs, obviously, but it's immense. It's extremely competitive. And especially if you're a small business owner and you're fighting the big guys right now and the state of flux we are in the economy, you have to be on point with your marketing. Because I know back in the day, and this was years ago, I think the figures were roughly 21 impressions to get someone through the selling motion or the sales funnel. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it's probably more than that today because, I mean, we have a lot of white noise from social media,
sure.
All kinds of ads, digital and print. It's just so important. So, I mean, I have two follow-up questions to that question, actually. One is, so from a marketing perspective, the new buzzword I keep hearing about, well, there's a couple of them. There's artificial intelligence-based marketing.
Yeah.
So AI-based marketing. But I want to talk about another form of marketing, which is the self-guided buyer's journey and that form of marketing. And I don't know how much experience you have with it, but if you have any experience with it, I'd love to hear your perspective on that, especially given the state of things right now.
I haven't heard that term expressed exactly. I think I know what you mean, but why don't you clarify for me about the self-guided
marketing. That because there's so much information out there in the marketplace today. Mm-hmm. A lot of buyers actually prefer to go through the buyer's journey themselves, meaning the days of cold calling into someone are kind of long gone. People will mm-hmm. find information out on the web
sure.
on their own.
Yeah.
And then it's the company's job to provide the inputs, the data, the fact sheets, the videos, you name it. So that buyer can go through. And so it's interesting what you say about relationship, because I think there's two components. There is still the direct selling or the direct marketing relationship, but I actually think a lot of that has pivoted away from that to where a company is only going to be as good as, let's say, their website or their ability to market themselves without the direct human touch, because buyers they have so much information, they don't really need to talk to a human all the time. Sometimes they do, but sometimes they don't.
So yeah, I would lump that into what we call inbound marketing, right? There's outbound marketing, which is a traditional form of marketing where you're just pushing out an ad. You're basically interrupting your customer, your target audience, versus inbound marketing where it's actually customers are, again, on their own journey and they find you. Let's talk digital. Let's talk the internet, right? They do a search. They're looking for a marketing professional. They're looking for shoes, specific types of shoes, athletic shoes or dress shoes or whatever, and they do a search. And in that search comes up some listings of different stores or brands or whatever. And then they click and they go into a website and then they browse around and they go out and they look for another one, right? So they're kind of doing their own shopping. And so, you know, so it's important to understand, you know, when, yes, it's true, you know, so that more consumers, because there's so much information, there's so much good access to getting information that the customers can shop and browse a lot easier without having to go out and shop physically, right? So as a marketer, you have to understand what is that journey that they're taking? What are the keywords they're looking for? You know, how do we get out in front so when they are searching, our stuff comes up? So, I mean, that's kind of SEO stuff. And then once they come and visit your site or to visit your social media site, what kind of content and what kind of copy specifically is going to grab their attention? Because there's some, like you said, there's so much competition out there. I mean, no one is in a vacuum where they're the only game in town. They're the only product like it in the industry, right? There's going to be a lot of competition.
Sure.
And so when they get to you, how do you capture them?
Right.
And so one of the things is, you know, there's all these lead capture stuff is, you know, hopefully you get their email and you give a free download or free offer or whatever. There's different ways of how to keep engaging with your customer. And then of course there's the, you know, remarketing tools, and that's where the AI comes in, and how you, you know, wherever they go on the web that your ad is following them, right? There's that part. And then that's when you get into more interrupted outbound marketing. But it's how do you capture them? Right. And so I'm always counseling, you know, my clients as far as that is, how do we optimize once they come into your site, how do we optimize them so that they'll spend more time and they're going to come back potentially. And even when they purchase, you know, what are some things we can do? So first phase is how do we get in front of them so that when they are doing a search, that our stuff is going to pop up. And then when they come in, how do we walk them through, what are they looking for? Right. So how do we walk them through their journey with them? So you build your website and your funnel in the website based on what our own research shows is what the customer is looking for whenever they're looking for this type of product, right? So that comes to a lot of research. And a lot of it sometimes is just, you know, looking at your own website traffic and all of that. You can get a lot just from that. But there's so much to that topic. But we're always, that's the other piece, right? When it comes to marketing, why a lot of people don't do marketing well is because all they do is put up an ad or put up a website, put up social media posts and all that, and just let it go and just hope and expect to be a return. But you got to follow what the customer's doing,
yeah.
Right? And you got to adjust your own content, the copy you produce, or even the layout of your website. You got to, and that's the UX part, you know, the customer experience, the user experience. And so that's the stuff that gets a little bit more complicated. And I said marketing in principle is pretty easy. It's about relationships. But then the sticky part, or the little more complicated part, is looking, analyzing what's going on in the marketplace and analyze what the customer journey is typically like for your type of product. And then what are they looking for? What's the keywords they're putting in? All that kind of stuff, so we can get in front of them and then help them through the journey once they're in your website or whatever kind of digital experience you're creating. Or even in your store. I mean, that's a great, you know, example is, you know, store, the layout, a floor plan in the store, the way they lay out all the merchandise. I mean, there is a journey that they're leading the customer through based on what they know they've seen the customers want. Right. So they position the shelving and the layout of the floor plan, the, what do you call it, the lanes, not the lanes, but whatever. Anyways, the whole layout is based on a customer journey.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, Costco comes to mind when you talk about layout. They're notorious for having what they call jackpot row. Right, which is when you enter into the, and it's basically everything in the middle of Costco, which they have deeply discounted, or so they advertise it as, is actually their highest profit market items, because they're buying it at such a in bulk, obviously at such a deeply discounted rate. That's their huge profit margin items. So that comes to mind. The other follow up question I had for you on that particular question was around. The concept, and this is another new buzzword that's kind of, you know, within the last year, I'd say, has started to pop up. And it's the concept of frictionless sales, right? So I have limited experience with that. But again, it's kind of tied to what we talked about with self-guided buyer's journey, but really making that selling motion, the selling process, if you will, frictionless. Any thoughts or nuggets of wisdom you might be able to share with our audience, just in terms of tips you share with your clients to help them provide a much more frictionless selling motion?
Well, it's all about providing and talking about what the customer wants and wants to hear, right? You really have to understand the customer and what they're needing. When you make a match to what you're providing to what the customer needs, and present it in such a way where it's not, you know, that used car salesman approach, then you get that frictionless sale. And so part of it is really demonstrating to your customer, to your target audience, that you understand what they're going through. Yeah. So right. One of the key things, especially when it's a cold, that's the first message to your target market, is, you know, again, it goes back to relationships. How do you develop a relationship with your target audience? It's by first empathizing, you know, what they're experiencing. Right. So, you know, part of what we do, like just with our own business, my wife and I's business, because we target married couples in business, we understand the demands marriage has, but we understand the demand that business has into the marriage. Right. And so in our messaging, that's what we talk about. That's one of the first things we talk about. And so right now, you're developing connection, right? Because I'm not just saying, hey, hire us because we'll make your marriage better and we'll make your business profitable, right? I mean, that would be the go-to sales pitch, right? But what we haven't done is made a connection to us and them. They want to know, you know, it's always better when the customer knows that you understand their needs and what they've gone through and their pain points, right? It's one thing we always talk about, you know, in market, where are the pain points, and we go after that, right? What you got to do is be able to relate to the pain point, right? We don't just attack the pain point. We have to relate to the pain point. And so once the customer understands that you understand what they're going through and what they've gone through, now you're starting to build connection. Now it becomes frictionless because now the walls are coming down and now they're more interested to go down that customer journey with you. So it really starts with making that initial connection and showing that you understand their pain.
Nice. Wonderful. Well, let's move on to the next topic, which is around margins. So as we know, many businesses operate on low profit margins, so they have to rely on generating a lot of volume. Is there another solution? And if so, what would it be?
Yeah, increase your profit margins, right? I mean, that's the simplest answer is increase your profit margins. So there's three ways to do that. You either increase your price, you lower your costs, or you do both, right? I mean, as far as the math goes, that's it. Now, how to do it, that's a whole nother thing. And when I talk about lowering costs, I don't talk about lowering costs the way most finance people would say, you know, cutting costs, cutting labor, laying people off and all of that. Now, I'm always looking for how do you increase efficiency? How do you increase the output for what you've already got without having to add more stuff in it? Because if your sales volume goes up, then most likely you're going to add some additional costs. And so you're going to be chasing your tail because if you're already operating on low margins, actually increasing sales volume can actually put a little bit more stress on the business because now you have to work much, much, much harder. So that's why most businesses, I mean, you'll see that where their sales volume goes up, their sales dollars go up, the revenue goes up, but the profit doesn't. And that's because the margins aren't right. So increasing your margins. So that's a simplified approach. So pricing is one area that the first thing I look at in every client is I just look at their past 3 years profit and loss statement. I want to see what's going on. I want to see what their gross margins are. You know, a lot of times where they don't realize where the margins is low is in their gross profit margin, you know, sales minus cost of goods. A lot of it because they have a lot of their expenses that should be cost of goods are in their operating expenses. And so what happens is, your operating expenses are still kind of relatively flat. So you would think if you have a profit margin, a gross profit margin, that if you increase volume, you will increase your net too, right? But if you've got cost of goods in your operating margin, that means those costs are going up at the same rate your sales volume is going up, and you don't know that. So once you get that part straight, understand really what your true gross margins are, then we have something to talk about. A lot of times, let's say, for example, this is so common, where a lot of businesses think they're operating under 50% gross profit margin. Once we get all the expenses correctly categorized and everything that should be in cost of goods in cost of goods, we see that the gross margins actually go from 50% to 30 to 20, sometimes negative. And here's where the negative part comes out. But a lot of businesses don't put in cost of goods is their labor. So let's talk about restaurants. A big part of their cost of goods is actually labor. You know, so labor costs that should go into cost of goods are everything, any labor that has a direct impact in the production, the manufacturing, the delivery of the product and service to the customer. And service-based businesses are notorious of not putting labor in there because we think cost of goods is mainly a product-based business. But as your sales volume goes up in a restaurant, obviously your labor costs are going to go up, right? Because you need the staff to service more guests, right? To do more cooking, to serve the people, the wait staff, the busboys, all that stuff, right? If your sales volume goes up, if you're trajecting your sales volume to go up, your labor has to go up because you need more people to help customers, right? Mm-hmm. So it's very common. So what they'll do is the cost of goods is only on food is usually what most restaurants look at. So they'll say 50% gross profit margin after I subtract my food costs. Now, what happens if you put your labor costs in? I've come into more situations where their gross profit margins are actually negative once you add their labor costs in.
Yeah.
So you wonder why you're getting busier and you're actually losing more money, because what you think is your fixed costs is not all fixed because you've actually got labor costs that is going up the same rate as your sales volume. Right. So we got to get the math right. We got to get the, we talked about finance before, right? Here's why most people, and you can't rely on accountants and bookkeepers, because most accountants are not trained to put the books to look at your business, financially, look at it strategically. They're more concerned about their tax burden than they are about the strategic part of looking at your business. So a lot of accountants, I've even had an accounting client that didn't put their labor into cost of goods. I mean, the people that do the tax, the filing for the client, they do the bookkeeping for the client, to do any of the accounting work for the client, those are all cost of goods, or really technically we call them cost of services, but the same principle, right? Because you need these people to directly service the client. That labor has to be in there. So that's to my point, is you can't even just trust your accountants, because not all accountants are like that. The kind of accountants that do think like that are more controllers and CFOs. Right, they have more of a financial background, not just an accounting background. Unfortunately, companies that are doing about $30 to $50 million a year in revenue and over are the ones that can truly afford a CFO. CFOs and controller, they think that way. That's how they arrange the books. But a typical small business don't do that. They can't hire a CFO because they can't afford it. So therefore, they default to an accountant bookkeeper, thinking that they're going to do the job. So, anyways. It's kind of a long-winded approach to getting to, how do we increase the margins? One, we got to figure out what your margins really are. A lot of times they're overinflated because you don't have your books set up correctly. And then once you see where your margins are, now we can start to work on pricing. Price, I'd say all of my clients over the last 6-7 years, they can all use a price adjustment up at least one sales category. There's always been at least one sales category where they benefited from a price adjustment going up. And a lot of times when they're priced too low is actually what I would consider their flagship product or service. The thing that they're best known for or whatever, they actually price themselves lower in that area because they think that they're gonna work off of volume.
Right.
But there's a big problem because you usually can't make up the volume. The loss in margin, the volume that you try to get or even get does not usually offset the margin that you lose. And so that's why a lot of small businesses are working so much harder these days for less money.
Well said. Well said. I know. So Bruce, I know you.
Yes.
Joined us.
I got a quick question.
Yeah.
I got a quick question. What is the differentiator? And you may have already said this, but what is the differentiator between having a CFO versus, like you said, that regular accounting approach? Like you said, the CFO organizes the books with that in mind. So what are some of those differentiators? I'm just really curious.
Financial officer, I mean, they are, that's why they're the C-suite, right? CEO, CFO, COO, because they think bigger than just accounting. Like I said, most accountants are trained more to look for the tax issues, the liability issues and all that, not from a strategic business planning view.
Gotcha.
Right. So that's why they're working with the CEO, with the CEO. They need to install all the working parts and figure out how we're going to make money. And it's so important. And so they're very in tune by making sure their books are set up so detailed so they can follow where every expense and every income and every expense, how it is connected to the business. Because in your business, everything in your business is connected to a dollar sign. Right. And so we got to know what the relationships are. Right, cost of goods is different than operating expenses.
No, I think you're spot on, because my CPA is just protecting me from tax liability and tax, and really isn't plugged into the larger vision of my business nor do they necessarily even know what that is.
And I have a recent example. I have a tax attorney. He has a, last year he developed this alternative to QuickBooks. And so he asked me to check it out. So he said, it's more intuitive. It's simple. I checked it out a couple of weeks ago, actually. And it was more intuitive, more simple. I mean, it was so easy. I mean, I had my last 6 months of income and expenses I set up, I mean, within half a day on this thing. Now, the problem is it was set up for taxes, which was great. In the fact that actually you can actually print out your 1120 if you're an S corp. You can actually print out your 1120 and all the boxes are filled in based on how you fill out the income statement or, based on the P&L. So that's how he developed it, was really for taxes. Now, the thing I asked him was, well, how do I get a little more detail in putting and categorizing some of the cost of goods? Also, I like to look at my profit and loss by sales categories because I want to see where my margins are depending on the type of sales I'm doing. And not just for me, I'm thinking more for my clients because I love to get my clients on this, but there's some limitations from a strategic point of view, right? From a tax point of view, he created for tax, which if that's all you're going to use it for, perfect. But from a strategic point of view, there was definitely some limitations. And so he said that's, you know, the next stuff he wants to do, but he just got limited capital, which is, I understand. But this is an example of how he set it up initially was mainly for tax. And so, yeah, it's a whole different ballgame once you start looking at things strategically for the business.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So I know we got a couple more questions here, which I would love to get through, given, I mean, just you have such great insight.
This one's on margin.
It's a follow-up to the margin question. You've kind of lightly touched on it, but I want to make sure we have a succinct answer for our listeners out there. And that's that owners are constantly finding themselves having to do everything, wear every hat, fill every role, right? Mm-hmm. We see that all too often. And they put in a ton of man-woman hours, I should say. How can they find more margin in their day to get more accomplished?
Yeah, so this is almost like the chicken and egg question. Because they need more time, they need more profit margin. Like, so we talked about the profit margin earlier. You know, increased profit margin will allow them to hire more people or give raises to people that can do more work, whatever. Hire contractors, whatever, to take some of the load off of their time. But a lot of times, you know, like we talked about earlier, a lot of times they just don't have the margin. And it's going to take a little bit while to adjust things and get the profit margins higher so they can start to hire people. But in the meantime, what every business owner can do is just say no. So they're taking on, a lot of times they're just taking on way too much. A lot of times they're even taking on new product and service lines because it's going to generate some more sales potentially. And that may be true, but then it's also going to take a lot more work, right? So what I always looking at is how do we, as a business owner, what's your most efficient use of your time? This is what every business owner can do, right? Even if you don't have the profit margins yet, every business can figure out what is the most productive use of their time and do it. Because only 30% of business owners' time is usually focused on the business activities. You know, the big picture stuff that's going to lead to growth. 70% of the time is dedicated to just the stuff, fighting fires, and some admin work. Sometimes they even, I know business owners that are doing some of the billing. I mean, there's just some crazy stuff out there, you know, unloading trucks. I mean, just some crazy, crazy stuff. And I'm saying, what's the best use of your time though? How do we flip the 70-30 the other way where 70% of your time is actually working on the business activities that can really lead to growth and only 30% of your time on just the other stuff? So, which means you're going to have to set some boundaries and say no to things. It doesn't mean no forever. It might just be no for now or just mean no for today. But there's got to be some of this stuff that not everything is an emergency, but they tend to treat everything as an emergency. And so they just kind of buy into that, right? And so they just get stuck in this hamster, the hamster wheel. So it's really about really assessing your time. So I do this every time. I say, what do you do day in, day out, week in, week out? What is the most productive use of your time? Circle those, right? Which is usually only about 30%. So, I mean, these are research statistics, the 70-30, but even in my own anecdotal findings, I find at least 60-40, 70-30. Sometimes I'll even be in a room of entrepreneurs if I'm doing a presentation or something, I'll ask this question. And it usually comes up, and every business owner knows they spend more time in the business activities versus on the business activities, right? So we all inherently know that, but how, what do we do? And it's hard to say no. And sometimes saying no is actually to clients, especially in service-based business. We want to take all the clients because we don't want to miss out on income. But the problem is not all clients are good clients. And so sometimes you mix some problem clients in there that take up more of your time that robs you from really servicing your really good clients. And sometimes your higher paying clients, the ones that are just less hassle, right? So, I mean, it goes with a price too, especially in a service-based business, consulting or coaching, that I always tell them, just raise your price. If you want to make more money, have more time, just raise your prices. Because what's happening is you're going to lose the low paying clients that are causing you more work to begin with. Right? And you'll be stuck with the ones that are the higher paying clients are usually the ones that just trust you and let you go.
Yep.
Right. And so there's just less stress. You got more time margin, you got more money margin, and you're just happier. And you can dedicate yourself back to that client, that high paying client, more, and you're happy to do it, which means the quality of your work goes up and their experience with you is also going up. And then they stick with you and then you refer clients just like them to you. Right.
It's like Michael Port talks about the velvet rope client.
Yeah.
Narrowing that down. Exactly.
Yeah. But it's so hard to say no. Right. And I understand that because, you know, especially these days in challenging times, you know, it's very, very hard to say no. But if you say no to some of the bad clients, a lot of times it eats up the margin for you to say yes to the good clients because you only have so much time in a day to service clients, right? Especially in a service-based business. And even in product-based or retail-based, it's kind of a similar thing, you know, especially if you're carrying certain products or you're buying wholesale or whatever, the same principles will apply that a lot of times it's kind of the ones that are always trying to negotiate with you are probably your biggest problem. That's the biggest red flag for me. Once you start negotiating up front, it's usually a red flag. And so I definitely don't go down.
Good point.
It's usually a red flag. So I just, So you want to enjoy what you do, right? And you want to have clients that you enjoy working with and helping. That provides us so much of a better experience for everybody. So anyways.
Well, I know we're about at time, and I want to make sure that we allow you a moment to share with our listeners out there where they can find you. So for our listeners out there, Robert, could you please share where and how and what are the best ways to communicate with you about your business and following this podcast?
Yeah, you can, right now on the main website is on powercouplesbydesign.com. It's powercouples with an S bydesign.com. Because we're really dedicated towards serving family-owned business, you know, married couples that have a business. So what we do is we help them relationally with their communication, conflict resolution, and we also help them in their business growth. All the stuff that we talked about today, we do in their business. But we like to do it as a couple. My wife and I, and then husband and wife on the other side, we go through the whole process as a couple. Because even if one spouse isn't working the business, we want to make sure they have a good understanding of what's going on, because the business is the number one asset in any relationship. And so they should be concerned. A lot of times they think they're not concerned until the business isn't doing well and the checks aren't, and the income's not coming in. Then all of a sudden they're concerned, right? So, hey, why don't we just understand what's going on? Because a lot of times, even a spouse that's not working in business that might not even know the technical aspects of the business can actually be at least a good sounding board, can be a good source of encouragement. And at the very least, they might even have some insights on who to do business with, because you don't need to know the technical aspect of the business to understand people.
Right.
And so the people part of the business is always there. And especially, you know, wives. I mean, for me, you know, my wife, I mean, she can read people like no other. And I've had times where she says, I don't trust them. And I said, no, they have a great background. They have great experience and they're good. You know, they'll bring X, Y, and Z to the table, you know, all the technical aspect of it. And so I discount her feeling, and then I do business. The next thing you know, it blows up. Right? And then there's one time a real estate deal that just went bad, and so that cost us really six figures. So I tried to learn to listen, So this is a lesson to all business owners. They don't need to know the technical aspects of the business to have a good feeling. And you need to listen to that and talk it through. And if we're honest with ourselves, we'll know that there's a number of times when we did something opposite of what our spouse said, and it cost us something. And so it's really about, and they're not always right, but I think they're right enough when we have a conversation. So if my wife and I aren't in agreement on things, I just don't do it.
Smart.
Happy way. When we are in agreement, we're pretty much never failed, right? So the only thing is sometimes the execution might be flawed, but in principle, the things done when we're in agreement has worked out. And so what it does is, so maybe we've lost an opportunity here and there. Maybe there's things I did say no to that actually worked out. But we've also said no to things that would have been blown up by my face, and I saw it later. Like, things came out after the fact. And so anyways, powercouplesbydesign.com. That's where you can find us now. And then we've got Facebook and Instagram. Same thing on LinkedIn. You can look me up on LinkedIn too, Robert Fukui on LinkedIn. I think I'm the only Robert Fukui on LinkedIn.
just look for the salt and pepper, you know, there with Robert Fukui. He'll probably be the only one that pops up. So.
Awesome.
Unless you Google it, then you'll see the other Robert Fukui that's in Hawaii.
That's right. Well, Robert, we really appreciate you coming on today.
Sure. It's a great pleasure.
Thank you for coming on and joining us. Bruce, do you want to take us home?
Sure. Well, that was a fantastic episode today. And come back next week to the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio and learn more about your business and your consultation firm and whatever you are engaged in. We'll be able to talk about it. Come visit us on Facebook at the Concierge Coaches, also on Instagram and LinkedIn. So until then, we'll see you next week here on LA Talk Radio and the Concierge Coaches Show. Take care, everybody.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.